Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, there are now two conservatives in the race for President of the United States in 2016.
I have a message. A message that is loud and clear and does not mince words. We've come to take our country back.
To the surprise of absolutely no one, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul is officially a candidate for President of the United States. He joins Ted Cruz, who did that a couple of weeks ago. A lot of conservative credentials in both candidates here, Jim. I think the fascinating thing, and I think the thing we should probably be most appreciative of Rand Paul, is the fact that he is making a very aggressive attempt to attract millennial voters. Those voters have gone overwhelmingly for President Obama in the last couple of cycles. And obviously, as time goes on, they're going to be making up a more and more important part of the electorate. So good for him for reaching out, whether it's the privacy issue, the NSA spying, whatever the issue is. He seems to have struck a chord. And whether he's the nominee or not, that might be an important issue come later on in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff to like and stuff not to like. I think that my boss, Rich Lowry, puts it very well when he says, if you look at Rand Paul, it's kind of like what would happen if Ron Paul had had a child with a normal person, which is basically what happened.
Right.
And so, you know, I find Rand Paul and his worldview and his way of articulating his ideas and perspective and what he brings to the table a lot more than I like Ron Paul. I was thinking about this and I realized a kind of unusual comparison might be made to Newt Gingrich. Different roles, maybe even different styles, and clearly some different philosophies in some areas. But these are two guys who are definitely big thinkers, who are very excited by ideas, who definitely think a great deal about philosophy, the role of government, how to maximize freedom and liberty. And they're going to come up with a lot of ideas over the course of a day, a week, a month, and a career. And some of those ideas are going to be good. And some of those ideas are not going to be good. And you're going to see, you know, some days you're going to get a really ambitious agenda for reform, and some days you're going to get moon bases. And that's, you know, what a bit of what Rand Paul brings to the table, that sometimes he's going to have ideas or perspectives that just seem off the wall or just out there or just not within the realm of politics. I think also both of them are a little bit undisciplined, particularly in discussions of foreign policy. I get the feeling Rand Paul, there's this debate about whether the term isolationist is fair or non-interventionist. Look, I think if Rand Paul had his druthers and he could have no crises, he would have the U.S. as uninvolved in foreign problems as possible. For obvious reasons, there are problems overseas that just can't be ignored, such as ISIS and people trying to kill Americans. And so Rand Paul has taken, let's say, one step closer to interventionism than, say, his father did. This doesn't mean that still, ultimately, I think he's much more of a classic libertarian than kind of the fusionism that has usually marked the Republican Party. And you got to wonder how much his taste is going to play amongst GOP voters. You got to love the way he reaches out to non-traditional Republicans. And so I've always kind of said with Rand Paul, I want him at the table, if not at the head of the table. We will see how he does in his pitch to Republicans as a whole.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and this is plenty bad. Well, Washington was foaming at the mouth over a power outage yesterday, and there are certainly some concerns about that given the sensitive information flowing around Washington. The bigger news is that the hacking that we knew about a little while ago was actually the work of the Russian government. Here is CNN Justice Department correspondent Evan Perez explaining what happened here.
Russian hackers got access to sensitive parts of the White House email system. They could even see the president's schedule, the non-public parts of it in real time. And they got access to all of this in a clever way through the State Department. Once they got in there, they used that access to trick someone to get him into the executive office of the president. Investigators say it's one of the most serious cyber breaches of U.S. government agencies.
And, of course, the administration now saying, well, I didn't really get to anything all that super serious, Jim. But once again, the Russians are doing what we expect the Russians to do. And apparently at this time, it actually worked.
I guess you don't see the cybersecurity isn't attached to the reset button.
Apparently not.
By the way, there was an interesting line in that report there, Greg. Did I hear the State Department?
Yeah.
The U.S. State Department had a cybersecurity issue, and that they got into really sensitive stuff by the State Department's, is anybody working at the State Department recently who had an issue with, say, emails and securities and whether it was on a secure server and things like that?
Yeah, she might be in the third martini, too. But, yeah, the former Secretary of State there, yeah.
But remember, it totally doesn't matter, right? Because she had a secret service around outside her server. So no one could do the Tom Cruise dangling from the ceiling, going in to replace the disks type hacking, because that's what you have to do. There's no such thing as electronic intrusion anymore. Yeah, so that's bad. For obvious reasons, despite our many, many disagreements with President Obama, we sure as hell don't want the anybody knowing his personal schedule and his movements and you know sensitive details like that. The worst could happen under a circumstance like that. And just a bizarre, bizarre to see how calm everyone seems about this when this seems like something that really ought to be secure. And, again, maybe that's a good kind of, segue to our third martini.
All right. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And it was just a week or two ago, just before you left, I think, that we were going over the list from the supporters of Hillary Clinton about words you can't use, because otherwise you're a sexist when you're covering Hillary Clinton, things like entitled and will do anything to win and on and on. Now, apparently, according to at least some supporters of Hillary, if you just refer to her as Hillary, just by that one name, that also is sexist. According to one person, I think it's pretty unjust. I think it shows the level of inequality that still exists in the workforce. And just in general in society, other people don't seem to have much of a problem with it. Jim, I find it amazing that people do have any problem with it. I guess we should just refer to the name of her husband then?
Greg, I had to mute my microphone there for a second for all the profanity. in the sense of like, oh, I'm going to say, oh, for heaven's sake, but I wasn't saying heavens. Because really inequality in the workplace is nothing less than the absolute oppression of the women's gender because people call Hillary Clinton Hillary in news stories. Really, if that's the worst problem, then we have achieved feminist nirvana. It's as good as it possibly can get if that's the biggest problem they have to worry about. Aren't they like still like, killing people and are there like no girl babies being born in China? Anyway. The reason people do that is because there is more than one person named Clinton who is a big, who is a big deal and who readers might think of. And so, when I find myself writing about any one of the Clintons, I find myself having to use, refer to Chelsea Clinton as Chelsea and refer to Hillary Clinton as Hillary on second reference, third reference, because traditional AP style book thing is you call someone Greg Corumbus on first reference, and in every subsequent reference, you just call them Corumbus. Corumbus said, or Corumbus works at Radio America, or stuff like that. When you have a story about the Corumbus family, in which everybody's last name is Corumbus, it becomes a much bigger deal. Well, that's what we have here with Hillary Clinton. That, if you refer to Clinton, it's unclear whether you're referring to Hillary Clinton, whether you're referring to Bill Clinton or whether you're referring to Chelsea Clinton, and particularly for stories that involve the Clinton family or the Clinton Foundation or things like that. Thus, you have to refer to her as Hillary. And the idea that this represents some sort of effort to squash her or not treat her with sufficient respect or something like that. First of all, you know who they should ask about that, Greg?
Who's that?
Lamar exclamation point. Right? And people may, from 1996 may remember Lamar with that just enormous, excited, big exclamation point.
Yes.
A lot of politicians see an actual advantage to being known by their first names, that they find it a certain, casualness, a certain, sense of people feel like they know the person. There's a reason, George W. Bush didn't mind being referred to as W. I'm not convinced that this represents this massive problem for her that they do, and the idea that there should be some sort of, SWAT team response to journalists who refer to her by her first name strikes me as, typically overwrought and ridiculous, and it's time to, these people need something serious to worry about.
By the time the official announcement comes, I think we're only going to be permitted to republish press releases.
Ultimately, I think you jump to the end game. That's, Shh, don't spoil the punchline.
There was a story on CNN yesterday about a woman who was forced to marry her rapist. So if this...
Yeah, come on, feminists. You know, wake up here. There are bigger problems. In the, you know, yeah, there you go.
Amazing.
If you found any of this previous conversation, you know, sexist or offensive or insufficiently respective to Hillary Clinton, the address is gregcorumbus@radioamerica.com.
Something tells me if you found it offensive, you probably don't listen very often.
All right, there you go.
Yeah. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.